Hey, welcome to Larry Reedy's America. This is the whiskey version. Tonight we have Alan and Mary Stenger on. And without further ado, I want to introduce Mary because Alan has been on episode 12 on Larry Reedy's America. And if you didn't listen to it, go back and listen. Interesting life, interesting people. And Mary, where were you born?
I was born in Fayette County, Connersville, Indiana.
Okay. Grade school, high school?
All through high school. And actually, I went to Purdue University and then returned to Connersville.
Okay. And when you were in grade school, high school, what did you want to do when you grew up?
I wasn't really sure. I originally wanted to be an engineer because I liked math and science. But I spent about one semester in the School of Engineering and decided that really was not for me. I liked a little bit of a lot of different things. So I graduated with a degree in education. So okay. I came out as a teacher, although I didn't ever teach.
You never taught?
I did not.
What did you do?
In 1991, there was a considerable teacher, there were a lot of teachers. And so many of us with education degrees became caseworkers for the state of Indiana in various capacities, whether it was child welfare or public assistance, various types of casework positions. And so that's where I began, and I've stayed with the state, specifically the Division of Family Resources, for 32 years now. So
wow.
I'm a regional manager and cover several counties here in the east central part of the state.
That's great. Okay, now, Alan is, besides being in construction, maple syrup,
beef jerky,
gourmet popcorn, the Sap Store in Brookville.
Yeah, so that's Mary and myself.
Okay.
We have the Sap Bucket. It's actually in Metamore.
That's right, Metamore. Okay. And also, I found out recently from Alan, who is also the administrator for the very successful Cross the Line 1524 podcast, that he and Mary are executive bourbon stewards. And I'm going to turn this over to Alan to explain this, and it's very interesting. So, Alan, take it away.
And I'll have Mary chime in here as well. So,
sure.
To be an executive bourbon steward is not to say that you know more than anybody else about bourbon. What it is it's to help learn sensory perception on bourbons. So a lot of people, when they taste a bourbon, they'll tell you all they taste is bourbon. Well, as you know, there are other characteristics of bourbon. There's in the nosing, you can smell maple, you can smell caramel. There's just a world of opportunities for things for your palate and your nose that you can get from a tasting of bourbon or even Tennessee whiskeys. The Stave and Thief Society has courses for a lot of different things. They actually have distillation courses, business courses on running a distillery. They have the bourbon steward course and the executive bourbon steward course. I took the bourbon steward course online and then decided it was time to do the executive bourbon steward course. We were part of a barrel pick with Batesville Liquor Co. at Limestone Branch Distillery, which is Yellowstone. Mm-hmm. And Stephen Fonte is the executive bourbon steward there. And after you do a tasting with Stephen Fonte, you learn more about tastings than any other distilleries combined, quite honestly.
Wow.
And he is the pinnacle, as far as I'm concerned, as a brand ambassador and in teaching the art of tasting. And he learned a lot of that from the Stave and Thief Society's Executive Bourbon Steward courses. It's not, you just don't pay your money and you're an executive bourbon steward. It's an 8-hour course. Test at the end of the course that you have to pass. You don't pass it, you got to take the course again. We had another couple go with us, and the gentleman almost didn't pass it. So I'm not going to say who that was, but...
Uh-oh. It's somebody I know.
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
But in the course covered everything from the yeast that you use, the mash bills that you use, doing the fermentation process, going from fermentation to distillation, and the finished product raw before it's aged in a barrel. So the taste you get from a bourbon, there are three main things that make that taste happen. So that's the mash bill, the yeast that's used, and the barrel that it's aged in. And to show you how much that barrel makes a difference, we were given two different mash bills that had been distilled. One was a high rye, one was a wheated bourbon, and we were asked to pick which was which. So my wife, she is a big wheated bourbon fan. And it was time to do the pick, and we both, actually the entire group, what we thought was the rye was actually the wheated bourbon, and vice versa. That's how much the interaction between the barrel and the distillate make a difference.
Wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah. So a couple of the other things, part of it, we went through different mash bills as well. Learned a little bit about each distillery as well. It's just a very in-depth look at bourbon. And then my wife's brought the sensory perception kit. So you might smell something, but you're not sure what it is. So the Stave and Thief Society also owns Flavor Man, which is a flavoring company. So when you get a flavored, let's just say you get a flavored vodka. This is raspberry. There's no raspberry in there. That's a chemical that tastes like raspberry. Or if it's vanilla vodka, there's no vanilla in there whatsoever. There's a chemical in there that tastes like vanilla. So what you're able to do is you can go through that sensory perception thing, say, hey, I smell, it tastes like vanilla, but I'm not sure. You pick that up and smell it. You'll know whether it's vanilla or not. We also use tasting wheels. I'll give you, after we get done talking here, I'll give you a tasting mat. Shows a tasting wheel on it. So that kind of helps you define what you're smelling, what you're tasting. If you think you're smelling or tasting something that's earthy, well, then it gives you a couple different options what that might be. When you have those in front of you, it's a little bit easier to pick those flavors out and those aromas out.
Yeah, because, you know, to me, and again, I don't know if it's age or I just don't have a really good palate, but I can pick out vanilla. I can usually pick out caramel. Get confused sometimes with leather, just smoky.
Right, yeah. Right.
But when some people say it tastes like cotton candy, I'm thinking, no, this is an adult. I don't remember what cotton candy tastes like.
Exactly. I'm going to show you a flavor wheel here. This is our tasting sheets that we use when we do tastings. So if you look, there's a flavor wheel in the center.
Okay.
So you look at that a little bit, and you see, if you're thinking let's just go fruits and florals.
Okay,
so you think it tastes fruity.
Yes.
So then you have a couple different options. What it might be a tropical fruit, a berry fruit, a pomegranate type fruit, and it gives you different options there. Oh yeah, you know, that maybe is a cherry taste I get off of that, or maybe it's a tropical fruit taste. And it's the same way with the wood taste. So most people can taste the woody taste in bourbons from the barrel. So you can pick a oak barrel that was used. If it's bourbon, it's got to be oak.
Right.
It goes different ways. Nuts, a lot of people pick up almond, sometimes pecan off of it. And then grains, it talks about rye. You know, if you're I'm a rye guy. I like ryes. Mm-hmm. If it's corn, if it's just corn, or if it's malted barley, there's cereal, there's cocoa. There's just tons of different flavor profiles that some people pick up. Not all of them pick it up. This gives them a chance to kind of dial in on what they're smelling and what they're tasting.
Yeah, because see, now, like, I can taste citrus. Mm-hmm. I have no idea what kind it is.
Right.
You know, I don't understand, since I've never tasted a tobacco leaf, how you can know it's a tobacco leaf.
So this is what I will tell you. So Stephen Fonte, who I talked about, he says some people just go so far overboard, you know it's BS. He says, if somebody tells me, and this is the brand ambassador for Yellowstone, he said, if somebody tells me they're tasting marzipan, I'm calling BS on it. Because there's no marzipan flavors here. Some people just get so caught up in, oh, it's got to be this or this or this.
Or they're trying to impress somebody.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. So what a bourbon steward does, we lead tastings. We try to help people pick out flavors. Folks that may not ever have picked a flavor out before, and I'll talk about Dwayne in our podcast, and even Jeff, he always just tasted whiskey. And now they're to the point that they pick out a few flavor notes here and there. We do tastings almost every podcast. We don't talk about all of them because we have tons of other topics we talk about. But it gives them an opportunity to, pick up flavor notes and understand why they're getting those flavors.
Well, on our next podcast, I've got a few whiskeys for you both of you to taste. And the one distiller, what he went through as far as describing the nose and the palate, I think he should be committed.
So you will have it. So, there's a couple things. So in all distilleries, there's a story. There's a chance the story is true. There's a chance the story's not true.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to talk about, I just listened to your podcast on whiskey. You just did. You kind of called me out. You wondered if I was going to be able to help you out with the history of the Uncle Neary brand. So I'm going to be able to do that. And then I'm going to tell you, I'll have to see the bottle, but there's a good chance that didn't come from there. There's a good chance it's a sourced bourbon because they weren't distilling. Their first distilled product comes out in 2022. So unless that
I didn't know that.
Most people don't. The other product that you had was, I'll pull it out here in a minute, but it is definitely a source product because their distillery is not even going to be done until 2023. That's a lot of the history. When we do a tasting, we want to give people the history of that particular distillery. The story, but the history. And, whether it's sourced or not. There's a lot of places that don't want to tell you that they're sourced. But nowadays with the internet, it's a lot easier to find out. We're good friends with several big distilleries that are upstart distilleries that started in the last 5 years. So those distilleries, let's say they're 3 years old,
mm-hmm.
and they're selling a bourbon that's 5 years old. That's a sourced product.
Yeah.
You don't want to put your product out there before it's ready. And we'll talk about a place that did that. And we'll talk about the Uncle
Nearest.
So Uncle Nearest, you guys talked about it's woman-owned, but that's not the big thing about Uncle Nearest.
Isn't it all black women?
It's African-American owned women.
Yes.
It's fifth generation. The, I'm going to use this word, master blender is fifth generation descendant from Uncle Nearest.
Mm-hmm.
So the story there, and it's confirmed by Jack Daniels, is he worked on the Lincoln County process for and helped distill Jack Daniels.
Okay.
He was a slave, and after the war, ended up working with Jack on the Jack Daniels brand. So that's confirmed Jack Daniels. Actually, they have a letter out that confirms that. So it's hidden history.
Mm-hmm.
But unless you had a bottle that's dated after 2022, that's a sourced product.
No, mine's not after 2022.
Yeah. So, but it's a great, it is a great story.
Oh, it's good, and it's good bourbon.
Yeah. So as far as woman-owned distilleries, there's over 100 of them. In the United States. We've been to several of them. The Wicked Dolphin that we went to down in Florida was actually a rum distillery that's woman-owned. And then we went to Jephthah Creed in Kentucky, which is woman-owned as well. So this is what happens if you don't source. So I don't think I've ever used this on air and used the name, but we went to Jephthah Creed about 2 years ago. They had their bourbon. They had bunch of flavored vodkas, which they're doing there, and they had their bourbon, which was only 2 years old, and they were giving that out as a tasting. And I will tell you, It was the worst bourbon I'd ever tasted. It had only been 2 years in the barrel, and it was horrible. I would have never, ever tasted it again. I would have never bought it, except that we were at Brookville on Tap as a host this last year, and it was a Brookville on Tap Beer and Bourbon Festival, and Jep the Creed was there. Well, now their distillate that was 2 years old prior was 4 years old.
Yeah.
We tasted it, and it's excellent. So sometimes you get in a rush to get your product out there, and you really should have just waited.
Yeah.
Because if we would not have ever tasted that a second time, which I wouldn't have, we never would have known how it matured.
Mm-hmm.
So it's there's all kind of.
I know, and I really, I mean, I like all the bourbons and all the ryes that I have. There's some that I would never buy again. Yeah, but and I like a lot of the Jack Daniel's products, but the original number 7, Greg Dierberg, he said, well, the only way I ever liked Jack Daniel's number 7 is Jack and Coke, and I'm thinking, oh, I can't imagine drinking a bourbon and a Coke.
Yeah, so Clyde Mays, so that was the other bourbon you tried. So just so you know, until maybe the distillery is expected to be open in 2023, their first product out of that distillery won't be till 2027. The product you were tasting was distilled in Kentucky, bottled in Florida.
Really?
Yes.
Well, I'll tell you what. The one that I had, I've got two of them. The one that's 110 proof. I mean, it's really good. So
yeah. So actually, they're in Alabama. They're based in Alabama. Is the story.
Mm-hmm.
Distillation of any alcohol products was against the law in Alabama till 2014.
Yeah. Well. Well, that's, a buddy of mine in his early career, I think it was, I can't remember if it was maybe Virginia or West Virginia, but he got transferred there, and it was still Dry County.
Yeah, so, yeah. I mean, they were making the Clyde May brand for a long time someplace else, and they were able to distribute it, but, I mean, until, 2013, 2014, it was against the law to distill in Alabama.
Wow.
So Clyde May was, I don't know if you know the story, he was a big moonshiner in Alabama.
Oh, really?
So that's where the history comes down. It's Alabama-style whiskey. It's now owned by Conoco Ridge Distillery. So it's just, there's a lot of stories there that you don't know. So that's what we try to do. When we do a bourbon tasting, we take the time, we learn the history of the distillery, the history of the spirit, and then make it a storytelling event.
Okay.
We do a big video. I sent you the audio for the video.
Oh, yeah. It
does the history of bourbon.
Yeah, it's great. In fact, I wanted to ask you, and I might as well do it on air. I wanted to put that where the link would go to your podcast on my website and on Facebook, but I can't seem to do that.
I can help you with that.
Okay.
Yeah, not a problem.
Because it's interesting. The reason I said Facebook, because I believe it's only 6 minutes long.
It is only 6 minutes long.
And
what I'll do is I'll actually give you the link. I'll upload the entire movie and put it on YouTube, give you the YouTube link.
Okay.
And then you can play the movie as well.
I'll put it both on on Facebook and on my website.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be
so
great.
It really goes through the history of bourbon. So you know what makes a bourbon?
Well, it has to be an oak. It has to be, bottle and bond has to be 4 years old.
Correct.
Bourbon has to be, I think, at least 2 years old.
There is no age statement on bourbon.
Oh, you're kidding me.
Nope.
You mean somebody could?
You could do a 3-month-year-old. You could do a 3-month bourbon if you wanted to.
Oh God!
It'd be the most god awful stuff you ever tried.
Oh, well, the bottle and bond. I've never had a bad bottle and bond.
Right.
Yeah, because that's it's 100 proof. It's good stuff. But most of the bourbons and ryes that I have, I really like. I liked. 100 and higher, a little bit better than the other ones, but there are some really good 92, 94 proof.
Yeah, so it's amazing. We've done several barrel picks, and it's not always the lowest proof. It's not always the smoothest, and you don't get as many flavor profiles because it's been diluted down, cut down so much, so you lose some of those great profiles that were in coming straight out of the barrel.
Yeah.
However, if there's some harsh notes to it, it's going to be that's going to be more prevalent as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you know, most of your Irish whiskey, most of it's 80 proof, but then you get into Teeling and some other ones that, you know, 92, 94.
Yeah, so good stuff. I'm not a big Irish whiskey guy. It just doesn't do a whole lot for me.
There's some that I really like, and some that I'll never buy again. The Redbreast 15 is, I think, is great. Teeling I like. My wife loves Jameson Cheap Date.
So my wife, she's a weeded bourbon baby.
Yeah.
So I actually grew up on American blended whiskey. I grew up on Seagram 7, Canadian Hunter. Now you're gonna say, what's Canadian Hunter? So Crown Royal, Crown Royal is one of the big Canadian whiskeys, obviously. Yeah. That was originally made by Seagram's.
Yes.
So Seagram's spun that off, sold that off, but they kept the mash bill and aged it for 3 years and called it Seagram's Canadian Hunter. Same exact mash bill, only aged 3 years. When I was a kid, not a kid, when I was a young adult, you could buy a handle of that for $14.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, Crown Royal doesn't do much for me, and Caribou doesn't do much for
me.
But I can understand why people would like them.
Yeah, I had a bad experience on bourbon when I was younger, and then I went to the blended whiskeys, and Mary got me back on the blended, back on the bourbons, quite honestly.
So how long have you been drinking bourbon?
A long time.
Oh, really?
Get close.
Probably started in college, actually.
Really?
Yeah. I've always enjoyed it.
So have you always had it neat? Or?
It varies, but yes, that's how I first started drinking it. But I typically lean toward the Maker's Mark and Maker's 46. Those are my favorites. I will always try new ones, but I keep going back to the old standby for myself.
So. Mm-hmm. That's interesting. And when did you start on the bourbon?
Well, I started back about 3 years ago, probably.
Oh, really?
4 years ago. How long have we known each other?
So
ask her how our first date went. Our first date started out me at her doorstep with a bottle of Crown and Maker's Mark, and that's how our date started.
That's interesting.
That's true.
Well, you know, I really enjoy it. I've tried it. Originally, I would try it on the rocks, and I didn't like it. And then I would put the big ball in there, figuring it wouldn't, you know, melt as fast. And once I start drinking it neat all the time, I don't like mixed drinks.
Yeah, I prefer it on the rocks myself. I like it cold. So, but I have no trouble, you know, when we're doing tastings to taste it. We use Glencairn glasses when we do tastings. And there's a reason for that. So the Glencairn is kind of tulip-shaped.
Right.
So what that does is first of all, you really get to see the color of the bourbon.
Right.
The appearance of the bourbon is just as important as the nosing and the taste. You'll get to roll it around the glass, see what type of legs it has. And that tulip shape really funnels the aroma up. When you do a tasting, the first thing you want to do before you taste is gently blow across the top of that glass to get the alcohol vapors away, because you don't want to inhale a bunch of vapors. You want to inhale the aroma.
Mm-hmm.
So gently blow across the top of the Glencairn, and then smell your bourbon. Nose your bourbon then.
Yeah. Well, you know, I've got Glencairn in the house, and when over here I usually bring these little 1 ounce plastic glasses, because you can still get a lot out of it, but I'll have 4 ounces a night. And it's in a Glencairn. I mean, I've got the big highball glasses over there if
right.
anybody wants it, or wants the big
right.
big boulder of an ice cube. So, but do you like yours on the rocks?
I like it always, actually. It just kind of depends on the mood.
Okay, yeah. Okay. Because it seems like it's not so bad with the big ball in it, but when I have the, like, just the regular cubes, and if you want to sip it, I tend to sip it too fast because it's getting watered down.
Well, I may do that for a reason. That watered down kind of helps me get through the night so I don't drink too much.
Yeah. Well, see, if I drink any more than 4 ounces, it might be on a Saturday night, or if any of my kids are over and they're drinking, and I drink along with them. But for the most part, I'm a 4 ouncer.
Yeah. So I don't think we ever got to the bottom of the question of what makes a bourbon a bourbon.
No, I know it's oak. I thought there was a 2-year limit. So no, what?
First of all, it's got to be distilled in the United States of America.
Oh, okay.
It's an American spirit.
Yeah.
Secondly, and most importantly, there's two most importants. It has to be at least 51% corn in your mash bill.
I knew that, yeah.
Then it needs to be aged in an oak charred barrel.
Brand new.
Can't be a used barrel. It's got to be a brand new oak charred barrel. So that's the three big things. There's a bunch of other things. There's the proof that it goes in a barrel is dictated. And there's a bunch of other things that make it a bourbon, but that is the three main things.
Yeah. Well, you know, years ago I went through, I had some stock in Robert Mondavi, and I went through, he had a private appointment, I went through Opus 1. And they use French oak one time, and then they sell the barrels. And I mean, you could eat off the floor. I've never seen anything like that. Every few minutes, a spray of water would come on, and I mean, they had just hundreds and hundreds of barrels. And the neat thing, and this goes back in the 80s, I got a special price. I think in a restaurant was selling for $2.50 a bottle, and I think I bought a case for $89 a bottle, and they had another thing, another bottle that they only sold at the winery, and it didn't make the grade as an Opus 1, and I couldn't tell the difference, and it was $30 a bottle.
Oh my goodness.
Because I got a lot of that
steal.
Too.
Yeah. Nice.
Yeah, so a couple of other things. So it's got to be distilled at no more than 160 proof. So you can't distill something 180 proof and put in can't be considered a bourbon.
Well, no, why is that?
That's the rules for bourbon. And then it cannot enter the bourbon. The aging, entering into the container for aging can be no more than 125 proof, which is 62.5% by volume.
Right.
And so people will say, well, how come we get bourbon that comes out that proof? Well, that's because things evaporate. You get the angel's share and the devil's cut. The angel's share, you know, that's getting water's evaporating, but alcohol's not. So, and then the other thing is, it's got to be bottled at least 80 proof to be considered a bourbon.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I remembered some of that stuff. I knew about the United States and the 51% corn because we went to a small distillery. I think there was 10 or 11 of us. And we actually made bourbon. And the funny thing was, the distiller, master distiller on this little distillery, he said, anybody want to try the runoff? And I said, I'll try it. And it was, you come out white naturally. And I thought, boy, that's really smooth. It was 170 proof. He said, I wouldn't get carried away with that if I were you.
That's why that's the runoff, because it was higher than 160 proof.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and what do they do? They run it off until?
Well, see, your heads and your heads is really hotter. Depends. First of all, it depends on the type of still. Column stills and pot stills run completely differently. Column stills, you can get that set up so you have a constant proof that comes off that Pot still's a little bit different. Pot still's, when that first comes off, you're coming off acetone, quite honestly. That's okay. Why the heads are not good to drink. Talk about people going blind, it's because they were doing that kind of stuff.
Right. Well, if basically, I guess if it comes off more than 160 proof, and they don't want to do anything about it, just call it American whiskey. Is that?
Probably. I mean, there's all kind of other classifications out there, but it's not going to be a bourbon.
Right, right. So. And you know, the other thing, there's a lot of good, to me, a lot of good Tennessee whiskey.
So do you know what the qualifications for Tennessee whiskey are? This is going to be a good one.
No.
It's got to be made in America.
Okay.
Got to be 51% corn. Got to be aged in a new oak charred barrel.
Okay.
Sound familiar?
Does that sound familiar?
Yeah. Something's missing, though.
Actually, something's not missing. So, their big thing is that they use the Lincoln County process for filtering. That's what makes it a Tennessee whiskey.
Is that right?
So, just so you know, almost all bourbons are filtered.
Yeah.
They just don't use that same process. The Lincoln County process uses maple charcoal for filtering. There's cold for regular bourbons. They'll use charcoal. They'll use a cold filtering. There's different ways to filter. So do you know why Tennessee whiskey is called Tennessee whiskey?
Because of that.
Because they want it to be called Tennessee whiskey.
That's it? Really?
That's it. It's a marketing. It's all marketing.
I didn't know that.
So it's no different than now we have Indiana rye.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
Unbeknownst to most people, the majority of the rye in this country comes out of Lawrenceburg, Indiana. MGP.
MGP.
People were buying bullet rye by the cases. That was all made in Lawrenceburg, Indiana.
Is that right? Well, you know, the bullet rye I like. The bourbon I think is overrated. And again, in the mixers, it's okay. Yeah. I think it's...
And everybody's palate is different. Yeah. Mary and I all taste the same bourbons and have two totally different ideas about them. And your palate changes daily. So it's like yesterday you might have wanted to eat pizza for dinner. Today, yeah. Pizza doesn't sound very good to you. It's the same way with bourbon. So I knew a gentleman that we just did a blind tasting with that swore he would never drink this style of bourbon, this name of bourbon.
Well, you know, the funny thing.
And he drinks it, and guess what?
What?
It was a blind tasting. He picked that as number one and number two.
Yeah. Well, we on a couple of these blind tastings, the three guys were, I was kind of shocked. Like, the one guy, hit number eight is, what's he hit? Buffalo Trace is number eight. And it's... None of them picked the same number one.
Yeah.
And I mean, and I can understand that. And when I was coming over here tonight, I think I said, oh, I probably made a mistake because my wife made some oatmeal craisin cookies with white chocolate chip.
Heck with the bourbon. Where's those cookies at?
But you know, the thing is, oatmeal leaves a taste in your mouth. So.
Right.
So, but I, you know, there's a lot of things. Now, tell us about your business.
Yeah, so we have a tasting business where we do tastings, for corporate events, parties, whatever you might have. It's called Let's Do a Tasting. You can find us on Facebook at Let's Do a Tasting or on the web, just letsdoatasting.com.
Mm-hmm.
We furnish the Glencairn glasses. We do not furnish the bourbon. We're not allowed to do that. However, we are licensed bartenders, so we can pour your bourbon. And then we'll do the background on your bourbons, give you a little history.
Wait, how did you get to be a licensed bartender?
We both are licensed bartenders in the state of Indiana.
How'd you do that?
There's an application you got to fill out and turn in and say $20. Now, in another life, I was a bartender for a while.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you sleep?
Not So, here's your chance, Mary.
It wouldn't do any good.
So when I sleep, it's very quickly. I lay down, and in about 5 minutes, I'm out. But I haven't bartended professionally for a long time. I mean, that was back in the 90s. So
okay.
I actually looked At the time, I was looking at buying a club, a fairly large club. I played music and saw the numbers running through. I was like, man. So I managed it for a while. And then I was like, and it was perfect timing for me to say no, because right after I said no, it's when the Mothers Against Drunk Driving came out. And the whole atmosphere as far as drinking and driving and going out late at night, it really died down.
Yeah.
Best decision I ever made was to say no on that.
Yeah. But on your... on your tasting business, I presume it's house party mainly?
Or whatever, corporate parties, house parties. We helped lead a tasting at the VFW in Brookville last year. We brought Stephen Fonte from Limestone Branch up, sold that tasting out, had 100 and some odd people there.
Really?
It was a fundraiser for the VFW, and we're looking probably to do that again sometime this
year. Wow. Any other... big things.
Not big things. Most of them are private.
So. Yeah. Because I would imagine that'd be a fun deal.
Yeah. I mean, it's a great way to break the ice. And the popularity of bourbon is really, rising, and it's continued to rise. And I don't personally see that changing for a while. So
I don't even, if you spend any time in a liquor store in town, based on a liquor store, no, I don't see it changing.
Yeah. So I, you know, anybody that gets a chance to try, you know, everybody talks about, oh, you got to get the Pappies and you got to get these dusty bottles. To me, every barrel pick is a unicorn. So for people that don't know, if you go buy a bottle of, we'll use Buffalo Trace, there may be 300 barrels of Buffalo Trace that are blended together to get that bottle because they want a uniform taste. If you do a barrel pick, that's a single barrel that you've picked out or somebody has picked out, either the liquor store or folks with the liquor store has picked out flavor profiles in that single barrel that you'll never get in the mass-produced bottles of Buffalo Trace.
Yeah. Well, you know, I've got the Batesville Liquor Store pick, and I've got a regular Buffalo Trace. I tried the regular one first, waited 10 minutes, tried the... store pick, world difference.
Yeah.
I mean,
when you get down, one of the things that we've learned is if you get down to what I would do when you get down to two bourbons, same name, just a different pick, is you do what the Fonte calls a shotgun. You do one right after another, and you'll pick out right away, you'll like one better than the other.
Really?
It's pretty amazing, yes. In fact, we did that last week at a tasting.
Well, see... You don't give a time for the finish, though?
When you're down, you've already done that.
Okay.
Let's see.
You can't make up your
mind. You can't make up your mind between, let's say, you're doing three and you can't pick up you can't decide which one's better, one or two. So do them back to back, and one of them will stand out.
Yeah. Well, you know, it was funny. We went to Hard Truth, picked a barrel.
Right.
And when we were up there, there was three different ones. The one nobody liked, just put it away. The other two, the one had a really great palate, and the other one had a really great finish. So Doug Bessler said, we were talking about this together, and I said, I really like the finish. Doug said, hey, how about to the bartender mix those two together? So Terry,
so it's you guys that made him buy two barrels.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Terry said, I guess they have to buy two barrels now.
Yeah, so it's amazing. And that's really the art of blending is being able to do that.
Yeah.
A lot of sourced whiskeys, the master blender will take four or five different barrels, mix, blend together, get the best flavor profile. You could have three barrels from MGP that are both the same age statements, both the same grains, same mash bill, and they all three taste different. And you might not like either of them by themselves, but you blend those three barrels together, and you might end up with a pretty good bottle of whiskey.
Well, I've never had anything from MGP that I didn't like.
You probably had more from MGP than you'll ever know.
Well, that could very well be, too.
Right.
But, like, Remus, I mean, even the cheap stuff's good.
Yeah. So do you know the story of George Remus?
Oh, sure. Sure. Yeah. I mean, I'm from Price Hill.
There you go. Now, that's a fun, if anybody wants to hear the story of George Remus, give us a call. We'll do the whole story. But you talk about a gangster, a thug. He had people murdered in prison.
Well, yeah. Well, he killed his wife.
Yeah.
That was his downfall. I mean, he was bigger than Capone. He had more money than Capone.
Killed his wife and still got out of prison.
Yeah, I know he did. I know.
He would hijack his own trucks. So this is during Prohibition. So he was one of the few distillers that had a distillation license for alcohol for medicinal purposes. He would hijack his own trucks, have his own thugs hijack them, and sell it as bootleg moonshine. He got insurance money, then he sold it still.
Yeah. Where his house was, and, you know, it was probably 2.5 miles from where I lived growing up as a kid. And I think everybody in Price Hill knew who George Remus was.
So it's amazing. I just heard another podcast had nothing to do with whiskey. It was about the Beverly Hills Supper Club fire.
Yeah.
And the history of the Beverly Hills Supper Club was way before that.
A lot of gambling.
George Remus had his hand in the Beverly Hills Supper Club.
Yeah, there was all big time gambling there. Yeah. I mean,
Newport was the Las Vegas as far as mob.
Yeah, Little Sin City.
Yeah.
When I was a kid growing up, and I was born in Newport, and I guess I was probably maybe 4 or 5 years old. My brother Bill, we went to a movie up on Mama Street. We had to take the back streets because a guy named Red Masterson was a gangster there, and they were having gang wars on Mama Street, big shootouts. And, you know, this was in the 40s. So.
Well, I mean, when I was a kid, there was still stuff. Even when I was 18, 19, when there were still all the strip clubs down there. Not that I ever stopped at them, but, I mean, that was just a place in town you didn't go.
Yeah. When I was 16 years old, some of us go over Newport 2 o'clock in the morning, drink till 3:30. They didn't care. Yeah, if you had money, you were old enough to drink. So it's just crazy.
Speaking of drinking, I think it's time. I'm not going to tell you what to do since it's your podcast, but I think it's time for a break and a tasting.
Yeah, I think what we're going to do, we're going to wrap this one up, and then we're going to go to a new one that'll be coming up the week after this one. So in the meantime, let's close it out with the national anthem. Oops, wrong one. There we go. Okay, I want to thank everybody for listening, and God bless you. God bless America, and I'll talk to you on the next podcast.